Banking, the third Lord Rothschild once remarked, consists essentially of facilitating the movement of money from point A, where it is, to point B, where it is needed. There is a certain elementary truth in this aperçu, even if it did reflect Victor Rothschild's personal lack of enthusiasm for finance. But if the history of the firm founded by his great-great-grandfather 2 centuries ago consisted of nothing more than getting money from A to B, it would make dull reading. It should not. All banks have histories, though not all have their histories researched and written. Only the Rothschilds, however, have a mythology. Ever since the second decade of the 19th century, there has been speculation about the origins and extent of the family's wealth, about the social implications of their meteoric upward mobility, about their political influence, not only in the 5 countries where there were Rothschild houses, but throughout the world, about their Judaism. The resulting mythology has proved almost as long-lived as the firm of N.M. Rothschild & Sons itself. The name Rothschild, which translates from the original German as Redshield, may be less well-known today than it was 100 years ago when, as Chekhov remarked, a moribund Russian coffin maker could use it ironically as a nickname for a poor Jewish musician. But most readers will recognize it, if only from its still fairly regular appearances in the press. The bank may not be the financial giant it was in the century after 1815, and the family may be a great deal more dispersed and diffuse, but the name continues to attract attention, some of it prurient. Even those who know nothing about finance and care less are likely to have come across it at least once in their lives. Thanks to an apparently hereditary aptitude for zoology and horticulture, there are no fewer than 153 species or subspecies of insect which bear the name Rothschild, as well as 58 birds, 18 mammals, including the Beringo giraffe, Giraffa camelopardalis rothschildi, and 14 plants, including a rare slipper orchid, Paphiopedilum rothschildianum, and a flame lily, Gloriosa rothschildiana, to say nothing of 3 fish, 3 spiders, and 2 reptiles. The family's almost equally recurrent enthusiasm for the pleasures of the table has also bestowed the name on a soufflé, made with glacé fruit, brandy, and vanilla, and a savory, prawns, cognac, and gruyere on toast. There are towns and numerous streets named after members of the family in Israel, Rothschild-owned vineyards at Mouton and Lafitte whose wines are drunk the world over, numerous Rothschild-built houses from the Vale of Aylesbury to the Riviera, and there is even a Rothschild island in the Antarctic. Pieces of music have been dedicated to Rothschilds by Chopin and Rossini, as have books by Balzac and Heine. The family is as famous in the art world for its many collections, some of which can be seen in public galleries, as it is in horse racing circles for its past Derby winners. In the course of writing this book, I have met few people who have not heard at least one Rothschild anecdote. Most commonly, the myth of the immense profits Nathan Meyer Rothschild made by speculating on the outcome of the Battle of Waterloo. Almost as often, the story of the purchase of the Suez Canal shares, which Disraeli did his best to make famous. And for those who know no history, books of Jewish humor still contain Rothschild jokes. There have even been 2 Rothschild films, a play, and a bizarre, though moderately successful, Broadway musical. It should be said right away that this book has very little to say about giraffes, orchids, soufflés, vintage wines, or islands in the Antarctic. It is primarily a book about banking. And here, some words of explanation and reassurance are in order for those readers who are more interested in what rich families do with their wealth than in how they get it. In fact, the firm of N.M. Rothschild & Sons was not technically a bank at all. At least not according to that great Victorian financial journalist Walter Badgett's definition in his Lombard Street, 1873. A foreigner, he wrote, would be apt to think that they, the Rothschilds, were bankers if anyone was. But this only illustrates the essential difference between our English notions of banking and the continental. Messrs. Rothschild are immense capitalists, having, doubtless, much borrowed money in their hands. But they do not take £100 payable on demand and pay it back in checks of £5 each, and that is our English banking. The borrowed money they have is in large sums, borrowed for terms more or less long. English bankers deal with an aggregate of small sums, all of which are repayable on short notice or on demand. And the way the two employ their money is different also. A foreigner thinks an exchange business, that is, the buying and selling bills on foreign countries, a main part of banking. But the mass of English country bankers would not know how to carry through a great exchange operation. They would as soon think of turning silk merchants. The exchange trade is carried on by a small and special body of foreign bill brokers, of whom Messrs. Rothschild are the greatest. The family are not English bankers, either by the terms on which they borrow money or the mode in which they employ it.